case number 083471 and 091734, Quentin Bullock versus Thomas Dart. Mr. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Steve Pushis, and I'm here on behalf of the defendants. This appeal stems from the denial of 11th Amendment immunity involving strip searches of prisoners at the Cook County Jail returning from court after receiving a disposition of a particular charge or case. These strip searches, however, do not involve cross-gender or cross-sex monitoring or cross-sex strip searching. They do not occur in public. There is no claim of any physical or verbal abuse. There is no claim of any improper purpose. There is no touching. These are strictly visual strip searches. They are less invasive than what was upheld by the Supreme Court in Bell versus Wolfish. Both experts agree that any time someone leaves the jail for any reason and returns, strip searches are necessary to make sure contraband isn't introduced into the jail. It's undisputed that every man and every woman at the jail who leaves and returns for any reason is strip searched. The Supreme Court and this court has repeatedly instructed lower courts not to substitute their judgment for prison administrators, yet if the lower court's order is allowed to stand, a jury will be allowed to substitute its judgment for the prison administrators.
Before you get too far into the merits, we have kind of a tricky jurisdictional issue. Perhaps you'd like to address yourself to that because of the initial notice of appeal and then the motion for reconsideration and
right.
The remand and so forth.
Well, my opponent in this case claims that this court lacks jurisdiction because there wasn't a Rule 57 finding made in the district court. However, if this court looks at docket number 394 on the civil docket, specifically paragraph 6 of that motion that was filed before Judge Bucklow, we specifically requested such a finding be made. Judge Bucklow made such a finding. We brought it to this court's attention. Remand was then made. We then, after the court refused to overturn or change her ruling on the 11th Amendment, we filed a second notice of appeal, which designated both orders. We then filed a second motion to recall the mandate and to consolidate the appeals. We had filed an earlier motion to that effect, which the court denied without prejudice. When we filed the second motion, the court granted it and consolidated these two appeals. So I don't see that there is a jurisdictional issue here. If I might turn to the 11th Amendment at this point, the Illinois Department of Corrections has promulgated county jail standards, which mandate that any time a prisoner returns to the jail, that he or she be thoroughly searched. That regulation has the force of law, and this court has said that when county sheriffs are obligated or when their actions are directed by state law, they are considered a state actor for purposes of 11th Amendment. And I submit the existence...
It's a rather novel argument that the sheriff is not managing the Cook County Jail.
Well, if I might, Your Honor, we're not saying that the sheriff isn't managing the jail, but this court has...
Well, that's what your argument amounts to, it seems.
No, what my argument is, Your Honor, is that the 11th Amendment is not an all-or-nothing proposition. This court has said you have to look to the particular issue. And on this particular issue, state law says thoroughly search. The plaintiffs in their brief cite the enforcement provision from state law. If we do not comply with this particular mandate, the director of the Department of Corrections can go into state court, have a state court judge order us to comply with the state regulation.
The state law doesn't require a strip search.
The state, well, it requires a thorough search.
How often does that happen?
That's not in the record. If Your Honor wants, I can supply that afterwards. Mr. Lane, who is the Department of Corrections, who is our expert in this case, can speak to that if necessary.
You didn't bring this up initially in this case, did you? Took you a long time to make this argument, I believe.
I'm sorry, which argument, Your Honor?
About sovereign immunity.
Well, sovereign immunity was raised as an affirmative defense, and we raised it in summary judgment, which is entirely appropriate and proper. Now, with regard to Your Honor's question.
You're saying that the jail can, Cook County can pick and choose when it's going to raise an 11th Amendment immunity issue. When has it been granted 11th Amendment immunity? In what situations?
Well, when in Scott versus O'Grady, this court held that when the sheriff is executing a state court order, he was immune under the 11th Amendment. Now, what separates the jail?
When we get a lot of litigation about the Cook County Jail,
right?
And that's a massive, almost 10,000 people in this jail on any given day. When has the Cook County Jail ever been treated as anything other than a county entity and not titled the 11th Amendment?
Well, we're talking about the sheriff as opposed to the jail itself. But
right, the sheriff.
I'll acknowledge the fact that in Franklin, in DeGenova, and in Rumen, the court rejected 11th Amendment immunity, but in none of those instances was there any type of state law mandate or directive for the sheriff to follow. In DeGenova, it involved the failure to provide medical care. There was no state regulation or provision that told the sheriff, don't provide the medical care. The existence of this particular provision is what makes, we submit, this case different from those others where this court has rejected 11th Amendment immunity.
But as Judge Sykes points out, there is no directive to do a strip search here. It says thoroughly search. So the sheriff decides what that means, right?
Well, the sheriff tries to follow the Fourth Amendment in this instance by doing a visual strip search that is less invasive.
Do all the other county sheriffs in the state of Illinois do the same thing?
I can't speak to that, Your Honor. I only represent Cook County.
And if it's not a state directive, then they would all have to do the same thing.
They should do the same thing. And I can't speak to the court whether they do or they don't. Now, this court in Craffisher versus Flanagan addressed a strip search that occurred in a county jail incident to an arrest. Before the strip search occurred, there was a pat-down search. This court recognized that no matter how thorough a pat-down search is, it's going to miss small items of contraband like rocks of cocaine or hits of LSD on a postage stamp. So by definition, a frisk search cannot be a thorough search, because I don't think anyone is disputing that the purpose of this regulation is trying to prevent the introduction of contraband at the jail. I submit that nothing short of a visual strip search would be a thorough search, given the purpose of the fact that this is intended to prevent the introduction of contraband at the jail. The fact that the sheriff is given some discretion under the statute does not vitiate the 11th Amendment. This court in Rumen versus Sheehan, which was the warrant tracking system, which is one of the cases I believe Your Honor is referring to, in this case that the court wrote, the fact that every step of the way is not guided by positive law does not vitiate the 11th Amendment. And the court talked about the governor's cabinet in that instance and said there's a lot of things that they do that aren't guided by positive law, but that doesn't vitiate the 11th Amendment. In Scott versus O'Grady, the state court order didn't tell the sheriff what to do or what not to do.
Executing the order of a state court, right?
Right, but it didn't.
That's pretty far afield from this situation.
Well, we've got a state court order. We have an order or a mandate of a state agency requiring that we do this, and state law
doesn't require you to do a strip search. It requires a thorough search, which continues the sheriff's discretion as to how to comply with that requirement of a thorough search. Your argument is essentially that a thorough search is, as a matter of law, a strip search, which is an extraordinary argument because it would require all jails in the state of Illinois to perform a strip search in order to comply with this requirement of a thorough search under the regulation. That would be an extraordinary holding from us.
Well, what I'm saying is the fact that the mandate requires a thorough search requires the sheriff's action, and the fact that the sheriff is required to take action allows him to invoke the 11th Amendment in this case. And whether or not we want to quibble with whether or not a visual strip search is a thorough search or not,
You're merging the merits Fourth Amendment question with the 11th immunity question.
Well, the question
of whether a strip search is permissible under the Fourth Amendment is quite separate from whether the sheriff in this instance is acting as an arm of the state by virtue of this regulation, which requires a thorough search, which leaves lots of room for determination on the part of the sheriff as to what constitutes a thorough search.
Well, there's two points I think I need to respond to, Your Honor. First of all, we talk about pendant jurisdiction. And in this case, we submit that the Fourth and Fourteenth Amendments are inextricably intertwined with the 11th Amendment for purposes of pendant jurisdiction. And so...
Perhaps true if there was a lot of merit to the 11th Amendment.
I'm sorry?
I said I think that's true if there was a lot of merit to the 11th Amendment claim, but I just don't see an 11th Amendment argument here that could be sustained.
Well, the point of the matter is, Your Honor, is that...
That doesn't mean that you can't win later on down the road on the merits, but...
Well, it's not just strictly inextricably intertwined when it comes to pendant jurisdiction. In Greenwell and in Jones versus InfoCare, this court noted efficiency and the possibility of avoiding a second appeal are relevant considerations. And if you look at the lower court's order here, the lower court said that the sheriff has to demonstrate an exceedingly persuasive justification for what is being done here. We submit that the lower court's order improperly shifts the burden of proof to us and also improperly applies a heightened standard of review. If we go back to court and we try this case and we lose, we will be back here raising the exact same issues. So it's not simply inextricably intertwined. This court has commented on the fact about avoiding the possibility of piecemeal or second appeals as a basis for considering pendant jurisdiction. And that's certainly true here. Because we know under Overton versus Bezzada, the burden is never put on the sheriff. It's always the plaintiff's burden. And under Turner versus Safley, which we submit is clearly relevant to the plaintiff's equal protection claim, that applies a rational basis standard. So we submit that there are ample grounds that would justify pendant jurisdiction over the Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment issues. Because the very things that the plaintiff is claiming and this court is discussing that might exceed the scope of the 11th Amendment is the basis on which the plaintiffs argue that the 4th and 14th Amendment aren't applicable. The fact that we do strip searches in groups, the fact that...
You have a case where the pendant jurisdiction has been upheld on the basis of efficiency?
Greenwell, Your Honor. Jones versus InfoCure both talked about that. In fact,
it's not invoked very frequently, I don't believe.
Well, I know this court has invoked it at least three times. The Supreme Court recently invoked pendant jurisdiction in Ashcroft versus Iqbal. I mean, at one point, this court viewed pendant jurisdiction as an embattled doctrine, but Clinton recognized that Clinton versus Jones breathed life into it, and clearly Ashcroft signals it is a viable doctrine that can and should be considered, and this court has applied it in at least three instances.
Some exigencies in Clinton versus Jones that are not present in this case.
Right, but clearly there aren't those exigencies in Ashcroft versus Iqbal.
That's fair.
So... if I might turn to the issue of the group searches and the heightened level of scrutiny, Your Honor. We submit following Johnson versus Phelan, where this court said that prisoners can be monitored at all times when they are naked, when they're in the showers, when they're in the toilets, when they're in their cells, means that we can clearly do a visual strip search in this case in groups. What you would see in the strip search in this case is no greater than what you would see when you are monitoring prisoners when they are in groups in the showers. And what would be the ramifications if this court recognized a right of privacy not to be searched in groups? Well, taking it to its logical conclusion means you couldn't monitor prisoners when they are in taking group showers. You'd have to put doors on toilets. You'd have to put doors on cells. There would have to be single cells. Johnson versus Phelan rejects the notion of a right of privacy in a jail context. So I submit that what we do here doesn't violate the Fourth or Fourteenth Amendment, and I'll save my time for rebuttal if the court pleases.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Morrissey.
Good morning. My name is Thomas Morrissey, and I represent the plaintiffs. Before I get started, I'd like to touch on one issue as far as the jurisdiction of this court. If we look at the record in this case, Judge Bucklow issued a ruling on July 30th of 2008. The defendants properly sought additional time to file their appeal, and they filed their appeal on September 29th, 2008. After that period of time, the sheriff then asked the district court if she was inclined to reconsider some of the facts in the case, not the legal issue about the 11th Amendment, but the facts in the case. The court then, the Seventh Circuit then remanded it to the district court on 11-3, 2008. And the court, district court, in February of 27th of 2009, issued her ruling. But her ruling did not change the 11th Amendment ruling that she made in July of 2008. That ruling was conclusive, a finding that the sheriff was not entitled to 11th Amendment immunity. So it's our position that they have waived jurisdiction because the first decision by Judge Bucklow is in July 30th of 2008. They asked this court in November to remand it. The court did, and by remanding it, it mooted the first appeal. And the subsequent decision by Judge Bucklow did not touch on the 11th Amendment issue.
Well, there was a motion to recall the mandate, and that was granted. So it seems to me that the defendants were really going out of their way to attempt to preserve this court's jurisdiction over the original notice of appeal. There were mistakes along the way on the part of the defendants and me. I was the motions judge on that. Rule 57 isn't an appropriate vehicle in an interlocutory appeal, so there's a problem with that. But it seems to me that every step of the way the defendants were doing what they thought they needed to do to preserve jurisdiction over the 11th Amendment ruling. Would you concede that?
No, I wouldn't, Your Honor. There were a number of mistakes by the sheriff. One, they didn't file a timely motion with the district court within 10 days. Second, during the period of time they had to appeal, they didn't ask the district court whether she was inclined to change her ruling in regards to the 11th Amendment. So I would say that the sheriff has waived it.
Well, the original notice of appeal from the denial of the 11th Amendment immunity was timely.
That's correct, Your Honor. But when they asked the court to remand it to the district court for the purposes of considering factual errors, that and the court granted it, that mooted the first appeal. And therefore, they do not have jurisdiction at this late date to raise the 11th Amendment immunity from the plaintiff's standpoint. Right?
Ordinarily, if that had been a proper use of Circuit Rule 57, it would not have mooted the appeal. It's a device designed to let the district court reconsider the ruling and advise us about whether it is inclined to come to a different conclusion. And so that's what was going on in that procedural maneuver, but it wasn't an appropriate use of Circuit Rule 57 because that only applies to final judgments. So that's where the problem came in with the recall of the mandate.
Okay. If I may proceed, Your Honor. This court in DeGenova versus the sheriff of DuPage County found that when a sheriff operates and manages a jail, they're acting as a county official. An elected county official and not an arm of the state of Illinois. Clearly, one of the main duties of a sheriff in operating and managing a jail is to provide security and safety for both the inmates and the people that work in the institution. It's clear when we look at this issue under the 11th Amendment that what we're dealing with here is the sheriff's policy of strip searching people that have gone to court and have been discharged by a judge. It's not the state of Illinois that directs that. When we look at the Illinois Administrative Code, the Administrative Code was delegated by the state legislature to the Illinois Department of Corrections to come up with minimum standards to assist sheriffs in both providing conditions at the jail and also safety and security for inmates. Clearly, the code is merely a tenuous and indirect manner in which the state attempts to regulate the sheriff's offices across the state, but it does not change the longstanding, and it doesn't outweigh the longstanding understanding under the Illinois Constitution, the Illinois Supreme Court, and the Illinois statutes that the sheriff is a county official. And if we want to look closer at the provision that the sheriff proposes here that is a mandate to him, it's clear, several things are clear, and I'd like to point out maybe some factual issues that Mr. Pusius incorrectly raised. First of all, the sheriff does not strip search females that went to court and receive an order from a judge discharging the case. They only strip search male discharges.
Wasn't that done by court order based on previous litigation?
That was based upon an injunction issued in the Gary case. Yes, it was, Your Honor. That was over 13 years ago. But it's clear that the sheriff only followed the state statute. I'm sorry. It's clear that the sheriff does not strip search females that are discharged from court. It's also clear that if we look at the the regulation that the sheriff brings it in front of us, that the sheriff does not thoroughly search people when they come back into the jail. If we look at the facts in this case, it's clear that several hours elapse after the male discharges come back to the jail. They're held in bullpens down in the receiving area of the jail for several hours, and nobody in the receiving, neither male or females, are strip searched or searched at all in the receiving area.
Okay, so you're obviously moving to the merits of the constitutional claims in the case. Are you conceding that pendant jurisdiction is appropriate?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. I'm not. If we look at the regulation on its face, it's clear the sheriff does not even follow this minimum standard as far as searching everybody. And searching, a thorough search, could encompass many different things. It could encompass a frisk. It could be a pat-down. It could be a visual search with their clothes on. When we look at the Illinois Administrative Code, there is a clear provision in regards to strip searching. There are several provisions in regards to searches of inmates. There is a provision in the code when inmates come into the jail, which the sheriff may conduct a strip search. But if he conducts a strip search, it has to be done in private, and it must be a dignified search. Clearly, if the sheriff was mandated to do something, it would have said everybody entering the jail shall be strip searched, and the regulations certainly do not require that.
The district court apparently contemplates submitting these legal issues to the jury. That's wrong.
Well,
right?
We filed a motion for summary judgment, and it was our firm belief that based upon our facts that we presented to the court, that there were no facts in dispute and that the court should have ruled in our favor. In fact, the initial decision by the district court, she did rule in our favor.
No, I understand that. This was litigated on cross motions for summary judgment, and then the district court changed its mind and said there are facts to be tried here, but the question of whether the strip search policy is reasonable under the Fourth Amendment and whether it survives equal protection review are legal questions for the court, and those issues should not be submitted to a jury.
Well, that was our position.
If there's facts in dispute, you know, maybe there needs to be an evidentiary proceeding of some sort before the district court to resolve those factual disputes. But the ultimate legal question on the reasonableness of this policy under the Fourth Amendment and the discrimination claim under the Equal Protection Clause, that's for the court. We don't submit those kind of issues to juries.
Oh, I agree. I agree that the district court could have found and
so
did find for.
If this goes back, you're going to tell the judge that she should make the decision? And
well,
not, and
that's
not
what
have
we
a jury
initially
trial, asked. You're going to withdraw your jury demand?
Pardon?
You're going to withdraw your jury demand?
Well, we do have a jury demand. But we agree with the with Your Honor. That
well, you're, either side is allowed to ask the judge to certify an interlocutory appeal here.
That's correct.
Under Rule 54.
That's
get
correct.
Get this case back here when we would have the legal question in front of us.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So why don't you guys go out in the hall and let them waive their 11th Amendment immunity argument, and you go down and get a Rule 54 order, and then come back and.
Well, we feel that the record is clear that even with the sheriff, if we looked at the merits, the issue of whether or not women that men can be strip searched in a public forum—that's one where. Issue that we disagree with Mr. Puchas. It wasn't a public hallway with up to 50 or 80 people. It was very intimidating and very threatening to the people that endured it. But when women, and the few occasions when women were brought back in the housing division, it's clear that they used privacy screens. The superintendent who was produced under Rule 30b-6 said, doing it with privacy screens makes no difference. We can do an effective, convenient search of these people.
This was these arrangements for women were the result of a settlement, correct?
No,
it
was a result of two or three cases that were filed seeking the sheriff to change the procedure. But it was the sheriff.
Whatever it was, it
right.
was done on the basis that women have problems that men don't have, right?
Well, that's one of the factors, but it also is a factor.
Now you're saying we have to apply it all to the men in order to meet equal protection problems.
Well, we have to look at the reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment, and the court did look at the reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment with regards to strip search in the May versus Springton case. And when we look at the reasonableness, when the sheriff's own person says, there was no reason why we couldn't use dividers for men, I think it's clear that the court could find that it's unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment to subject people to open strip searches.
That we should find that? Is that what you're asking?
Yes. The district court initially should have found it's unreasonable. And this court could find that based upon the unrebutted facts in this case.
You didn't bring a cross appeal.
We did not.
So we can't, you know, issue instructions to enter judgment for you.
I understand that, Your Honor. But I think the district court should and did find initially that it was unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment because privacy is provided for women and
why
not for men.
That argument to us?
Well, just because I was asked in regards to certain merits. But I think this case, which is in front of this court, can be decided simply on the face of the Illinois Administrative Code, and we don't have to look at the merits. That's for another day. I agree with that.
And you agree that these claims should not be submitted to the jury?
I agree that they could be decided by the district court because the law is pretty clear.
And that they're not properly jury questions?
That's correct. Whether or not a person, if there is no reason for doing it in public, it's certainly unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment, we would submit. If there's no other questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you. Counsel, how much time? You have 4 minutes for rebuttal.
I'll try to be brief. Your Honor, we talked just a second ago about factual disputes. There is a legal question, though, that is presented. This Court and the Supreme Court have said that lesser intrusive alternatives are not a consideration for determining whether or not the Fourth or Fourteenth Amendment is violated. This Court has ruled that it has jurisdiction to determine whether or not alleged factual disputes are material. I submit, if you look at what Judge Bucklow denied the Fourth and Fourteenth Amendment arguments on, she was looking at an expert report that said you could get rid of the commissary, you can take the commissary out of the RCDC and build new jail cells. You can do things differently. But this Court and the Supreme Court has repeatedly held lesser intrusive alternative arguments of this type are not germane. And if this Court has the authority to determine whether or not alleged factual disputes are material, then I submit this Court has the authority to say, because those facts are not legally material, the sheriff is entitled to judgment in his favor as a matter of law on the law, because these searches are less invasive than in Bell, and what we were doing do not violate the men's equal protection rights.
That's only appropriate if this is the sort of case that falls under pendant appellate jurisdiction.
Well, the Court has, on a number of occasions, and we've cited these cases in our briefs, when the issues are fully developed and they're before the Court has not hesitated to address them.
Actually, the trend in our case law is in the opposite direction.
If I might, one other thing, Your Honor, going back to the 11th Amendment issue. Mike Lane, who was the director of the Department of Corrections, testified to his understanding that the visual strip searches that we do here are exactly what the regulation requires.
That's not dispositive.
And plaintiff's expert acknowledges that any time you leave the jail and return for any reason, you have to be strip searched. Plaintiffs even admit that. So there is no question of fact here on that point. And I think
it's really not a factual question, the 11th Amendment. It's a legal question about whether the sheriff is acting as an arm of the state because of this regulation. That's a pure legal question. He thinks he has to do to comply with the regulation is not relevant. What's relevant is what the regulation actually requires him to do and whether that makes him an officer of the state as opposed to
regulation,
a county officer.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. The regulation requires a thorough search. And what we're doing is a thorough search.
Well, what you're doing may be a thorough search, but that's a separate Fourth Amendment question, and it may be permissible under the Fourth Amendment. But the regulation plainly does not require a strip search. If the regulation said do a strip search in all cases, you might have an argument that there's a state mandate, he's an arm of the state, there's sovereign immunity. Without that, I don't think you've got a winner of an 11th Amendment claim here.
Well, to sum up, I see that my time is short. We submit that this Court, under pendant jurisdiction, can address all of these issues. And we would ask the Court to do so, because otherwise we're back in the district court, and a jury is going to be able to second-guess.
Well, your opponents just said that they concede that this case should not be submitted to a jury, that these are legal issues, so you might have a different litigation strategy when you go back.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.